Welcome back to the Jeff Flores Show at FM Talk 106.5. Thanks for staying with us on this Wednesday morning. 251-343-0106, time permitting. We will go get to some of your text. Real quick programming note before we move on to our next guest. But coming up on tomorrow's show, former State Senator Dick Brubaker running for that congressional seat, Congressman Barry Moore, and Caroline Dobson running against Dick Brubaker. So tomorrow is AL2 day, former and current AL2 congressional district. So please tune in for that. But joining us now, very pleased to have my next guest. He is, got to know him really well when I was on up on WVNN in Huntsville, but he still makes time for me from time to time. But State Senator Sam Gavan is with us. Senator, good morning. How are you?
Hey, I'm well. Good to see you today.
Hey, thanks for coming by. Your impressions of the session so far, that early half was, you got some hot buttons out of the way that typically I would think wouldn't come until after the budgets were done. But ballot harvesting, school choice, and the divisive concepts are now done. And you get this workforce package. You got gambling still outstanding. But your impressions of the session so far seems kind of upside down a little bit.
Well, it certainly was a different approach, and I think it was a good approach. I don't know that it could have gone a lot better outside of the gambling issue, probably, than we could have anticipated. I think we've had a very successful session so far, and we passed a lot of issues that are important to the voters. And we're now more into the fine-tuning of different things. I think we've got a lot of the heavy lifting out of the way, at least in the Senate side. I haven't kept up with what the House has been doing with those particular bills that we had. Of course, their rules for filibuster are
different,
much more constrained than the rules in the Senate. So we had to endure some long days and evenings there to bring forth some conservative package, but.
Well, this is, before these last couple of years, you had speaking of upside down situations where you guys in the Senate were passing bills, sending them down to the House, and they would, the clock would run out or whatever would happen. And now that seems to be kind of coming back to way.
Well, I would say it's a little bit both ways. For instance, the House passed several bills. DEI, or I think we were calling it
divisive concepts,
the House passed ballot harvesting, and then just to see them die in the Senate. And so I think the House appropriately took the attitude that the Senate had on some other matters. It's like, okay, Senate, if y'all want to do this, y'all pass it, and then we'll take it up. And so that has happened a little bit over the last couple of years as the House did some things. And it's a two-way street. And I've seen over time there's some bills that we passed in the Senate, and I'm like, why in the world did we pass that? And then, he goes to die a quiet death in the House. And then vice versa. Why did the House pass this? And then they send it, to us, and then we give it a quiet death in the Senate. So I think that's a little bit of that is just kind of part of the sausage making process of where you have to let certain people get things out of your body,
right,
to sort of preserve harmony, and then let the other House handle it.
Well, I was talking to Speaker about this, but your impressions of what is the working relationship between the two chambers like right now, you think?
Well, right now, I think, unfortunately, the gambling issues caused a little bit of a wedge, more so than normal. There's always a little give and take about, they're passing more of our bills. We're passing, whatever. We do try to have a balance because it takes two to tango, okay? The House can do nothing alone. The only thing the Senate can do alone is confirmations.
Right.
That's not how bills get passed. I mean, that's just simply approving people on boards and agencies and whatnot. So we have to have a good harmony. I know there's been some antagonism here lately. Privately that may be funny, but, it's not. It is serious in terms of how we interact with respect between the two houses.
Well, you mentioned the gambling issue. What's going to happen there, you think? Because some of your colleagues in the Senate think it's done, but it sounds like Pro Tem Reid is going to appoint conferees, does that make you think its prospects are better?
Unless there is a rethinking, you know, it could be a chess match here, right? Just, you know, trying to figure out who's going to blink or whatnot. I've been frustrated by certain elements of the press have been trying to attribute the failure of the Senate to pass the House version on me. And I told my Sunday school class this weekend, I said, I wish I had that much power, but I don't. I mean, it's really laughable. But I think maybe where that came out is through me just, you know, I have got a pretty good track record of doing a vote count on gambling in the Senate. And I announce what the vote count is, and people act as if I've lobbied everyone to, you know, get to that point.
Right.
I did was count votes.
You're not saying anything that we, you know, anybody in the public couldn't have done. It's just you looked at the Senate this year, and you look at gambling, and you looked at who supported in the past. Well, they're no, a lot of these guys are no longer there.
And two people, change their votes, or at least on the initial thing, and certainly Senator Williams is a no, and it's a hard no, and so you start looking at these new senators, and I was talking to these new senators coming in, and honestly, I thought one of them would be sort of, I won't name names, be kind of full-blown casino-type stuff, and he was absolutely opposed to casinos, and I just think people are not, what I see a frustration with is that, well, we're leaving all this money on the table. And I talked to a particular senator who early on was talking to me about it. And I'm like, those of us that are opposed to casino gaming don't care about the money. I mean, it's not about that. What do we want our state to look like?
It's a principled stand, right?
Yeah. And the fact of the matter is that the House version only had 7 Republican votes. And all Democrats. So that's 15 votes. For the listeners that don't know, it requires 21 affirmative votes, not of 60% of those voting, but 21 affirmative votes of the body to get there. And we worked. There was a constitutional amendment that allowed for a lottery and allowed for some, I think Dale Jackson refers to him as quasi-legal, status quo kind of thing. And I was willing to vote for that. And at least 2 other senators that represent Madison County, maybe 3, were willing to vote for that. But when it got pushed over to expanding to other sites beyond what they already had in their constitutional amendment, that was just was a bridge too far for us. And so you would have had higher numbers, I think, but I will say this, the Democrats are good at hanging together.
They are.
And they would not budge until all of them, all 8 of them, were satisfied. And by getting that 8th vote, you picked up, you know, again, it was all or nothing with them, and then you lose 3 to 4 Senate votes with that. So it's unfortunate that we can't give the people what they want, I think, which is a clean lottery. But I just don't know what the future is going to hold on this. Well, but you're not going to miraculously pick up a bunch of Senate votes for this, in my estimation. And that's not me lobbying them. That's not me breaking their arm. I have no power to break their arms. That's just me talking to them over time. I just don't see it.
Well, something you're from Madison County, and it's sort of the same situation I think people in Baldwin County are. It's just don't want it in your county. We got your own kind of growth. This is not the kind of economic development, if you will, that we want in our area. It's just, you know, let someone else do that or whatever. And when you look at it, Senator, and you get that CA out of the way, if the language isn't specific in the constitutional amendment, what's to stop a future legislature from saying, well, there's so much money to be made here in Madison County and Baldwin County at the beach or whatever. What's to stop them from saying, okay, if y'all want to do casinos, let's do it there?
What's to stop them from getting every interstate and right at the state line and saying, hey, this is a great place to do it. We'll get these folks from Tennessee coming in Limestone County. We'll get the folks coming in on their way to, Anniston and Oxford and just, party. And, you know, a lot of it does seem to be not in my backyard. But the way that some of this was worded, I think it gave great pause to Senator Elliott, gave great pause to Senator Wagner about where it would be located. And so there just was a whole lot of jockeying in there that got people skittish about where things were going. I don't know if a lockdown on that issue would cause people to say, okay, I can support this now because I really know where everything's going to go. But I think the way that we're wording originally, and it's been so long since I looked at it, to be honest with you, I want to say that just it opened the door. If certain things didn't happen, that the Houston County facility, Lowndes County facility, and the quote Northeast Alabama facility could be relocated to other parts of the state. So, you know, you could have gaming coming to a town near you.
Well, what changed for you? So when the Senate did its comprehensive bill a few years back, a lot of you guys are on board.
Not me.
Jim McClendon and Del Marsh and those guys had it. You got a lot of votes for it. And then I know that the makeup of the Senate has changed, so obviously I don't have the votes now. But it seemed like your chamber was way more receptive to it than it is now.
Well, you didn't have the pro tem pushing it the way that Marsh was. I mean, that was his bill. Even when he stepped down as pro tem, he still had a lot of influence over people, I think. And then you had, Senator McClendon was a big advocate for it. He's no longer in. Then you had, and Senator Marsh was replaced by a no vote. Senator Holly was replaced by a no vote.
Tom Whatley.
I don't know where Senator Hovey would have been on that if we'd come up for, if that vote had been there. I can't speak to that. So that might have been a wash. I'm not sure. But so, and then again, Senator Williams, you know, reversing his position on that was a big deal. And so I just think that the body just was totally different in terms of who was there. Because, I mean, the no's that were no's before continue to be no's on comprehensive gaming.
What let's move on to something. Move on to this ethics discussion. Just a few more minutes here. The House has this ethics bill, and you aren't kind of talking about it. It doesn't have a Senate sponsor, but that's not necessarily important right now. What do you think of this whole ethics discussion? Do you like the House effort? How do you feel about this?
I think Representative Simpson's done some great work. I think there are a lot of issues here that we've been dealing with, and this is not, I know my good friend Stan McDonald was, looking for ghosts, in my opinion, on the coincidence with this bill and gambling. And I had met him last week along with another member of the Ethics Commission. And, I explained to him that we'd had, you know, when my class was freshman, we had a meetings with a senator, senator who had worked on ethics, another with a House member who had worked on ethics, and we had, someone from LSA in both of those meetings because we were concerned about them 6 years ago. We were concerned about the vagaries of it. We were concerned about unintended consequences and the ability, we're part-time legislators. None of us, this new bill that is drafted, the bribery implications have actually broadened. It's been strengthened. Because we're not worried about the bribery part, right? We're worried about the unintentional gotchas, especially when it comes to a political fight in the future when, somebody starts looking for a way to take one of us out.
Right, right. Because this is what Trump's going through. But you have a wide open ethics law that's interpreted however you want to interpret it. And if we've had in the past, Senator, or rogue AGs, what happened to Guy Hunt, I think, if you're just looking for an excuse to go after one of their political opponents, what's to stop I don't think this is necessarily something Steve Marshall would ever do, but what's to stop his successors.
Agree, but it's not about individual personality. I mean, I trust Steve Marshall to do the right thing there, but
it's
I don't know who's going to be next, right?
Yeah.
And you've got all these DAs. I mean, you know, I could be, let's hypothetical, folks, I'm not running for attorney general. All right, but let's say I was taking some positions and it was known that I was going to be running for attorney general, and a DA of a certain county, like, well, I don't want to run against him. Let me just kneecap him early.
Yeah.
You know, they could come in and you know, come up with something. Because even if they don't get you, you know, you lose. If you're in court, you're losing. If you're having to call your first witness, you're losing. Now, you may win the case, but it's bad PR hit. It's going to be, you know, it's going to be attack on your character. So many different things there that can be just horrible, and also having to pay to defend it. So one of the House members I was visiting with last night reminded me of something from our, I think, our first year when they had the ethics talk and orientation. Yeah, three different lawyers had three different opinions.
Right.
And I had forgotten about that. But that's and then some of the stuff that is out there is, you know, kind of like, well, this is what it's going to be. Well, that's what Tom Allbritton says it's going to be. And I am not a Allbritton attacker, by the way. But, you know, Tom Allbritton's not going to be there forever. What's the next guy or gal going to say? And so, you know, we need consistency. We need something that makes sense and not where we're all just kind of guessing and wringing our hands. Are we walking on a wild side or not?
But it just seems like everything's such a mess. You got this, the commission has these people have outstayed their term. The appointing authorities haven't appointed somebody. You have this weird turf war between the AG and the commission. And then you have, like, we could go back to the Hubbard saga and start a speaker about this, like, these definitions of terms that are just kind of whatever they happen to be, a principle or whatever. They need better definitions. I mean, there's a lot of things that need to be fixed with the ethics.
I agree. And there's still some stuff that, you know, I'm looking at the bill that's there, and I'm just speaking from my perspective, not the body's perspective for sure. But there's some tweaks I think we need to make to it. I don't like the fact that, that I think because of the, I think we need a better wall there between the legislature and the Ethics Commission. And so I'm going to have some suggested amendments in that arena. You know, for instance, it would not allow the ethics commissioner to be removed by the legislative council that I chair at the current moment. So there's some things like that that I think we need to work on. But, you know, it'd be interesting to see what the appetite of the Senate is going to be to undertake this legislation this year.
We'll be watching. Sarah, thanks for your time this morning. Kind of late notice, but you came by, and we do appreciate it.
Anytime. Enjoy visiting with you, always.
State Senator Sam Gavan, ladies and gentlemen, we'll be right back to wrap it all up. This is the Jeff Moore Show on FM Talk 106.5.
All night, sleep all day, I ain't at my best. Hey, yes, we are beer takers. Yes, we are hell raisers.